When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to the Three Down Nation podcast. I'm joined by John Hodge and JC Abbott. Of course, I'm Justin Dunk. Today, we're discussing TSN broadcasting. Just two, only two preseason games. Come on, TSN.
Ottawa losing two key running backs for the upcoming season.
24-year-old offensive lineman Logan Bandy retiring.
And how many Canadians could be selected in this year's NFL draft? But first, three, count them boys, three, a third of the league, CFL teams violated the salary cap in 2023 with the Hamilton Tiger Cats, Winnipeg Blue Bombers, and BC Lions going over by varying amounts. Hodge, this drew quite a response on the socials. Do you think it's a big deal, little deal, or no deal at all?
This is no deal, and it's not for the reason people think. A lot of people on social media say, well, it's not really a salary cap. It's like a luxury tax, because, of course, for the first $100,000 that teams go over, they are not penalized by taking away draft picks. It's literally just a dollar-for-dollar fine. So the Ticats, I mean, first of all, the Ticats went over by $2,600, which like is a rounding error. That doesn't really bother me. I'm sure Bob Young is happy to shell out $2,600.
That could be an incentive bonus too, you know?
It could be like that is a meaningless amount of money even to CFL teams. Winnipeg went over by just under $26,000. BC went over by just under $86,000, which is obviously more money. But here's the thing that I'm working on doing some reporting about that a lot of people don't know about, which is the fact that as of the new CBA, teams are permitted to pay players as much marketing money as they want to, and marketing money does not count against the cap. There is a floor that teams have to meet for marketing money, but there is no maximum amount. Theoretically, teams could pay a player, you know, $100,000 on the cap and then pay them another $1 million in marketing money, and that would
Rocket Ishmael money.
That'd be perfectly allowed, perfectly permitted. And some people have asked the question, well, what is reasonable marketing money? You know, traditionally players might have $5,000 to $10,000 of marketing in their deals, but now we've got players like, you know, Dalton Schoen, Brady Oliveira, who have $30,000 to $50,000 of marketing money in their contracts. We've got players like Chad Kelly who have $100,000 of marketing money in their contracts. So Chad Kelly, for everybody, you know, going, wow, he's making $600,000. The answer is no. He's making $500,000 on the cap and $100,000 off, right? Brady Oliveira is making $180,000 on the cap and $50,000 off. So until this marketing money issue to me gets sorted out, and I mean it's written into the CBA, which is good for another 5 years after the recording of this podcast, to me it's meaningless when a team goes over a little bit, and I would even go as far as to say, you know, in a place like Winnipeg, when the Bombers are posting $5.5 million profits, I think Wade Miller is perfectly happy for the Bombers to go $99,999 over the cap and possibly even a little more if it means staying competitive, because at the end of the day, even losing like a late round pick is not a huge disincentive in the CFL. So to me, you know, is it noteworthy? Yes. Is it newsworthy? Yes, I suppose. But is this a, you know, hit the panic button big deal? The answer is no, not at all.
Let's be frank. The only big deal here is that there's not more teams taking advantage of this leeway and going over the cap. Because if I was a general manager in the CFL, I would be planning to take advantage of this. Pay the dollar for dollar fine. Get an extra player on the roster. Get a few more incentives in a contract that can max out to lure a guy to your team. Make your football team better and take advantage of what you're legally allowed to do in this league. And there was a lot of pearl clutching when this news came out from fans, from former Montreal Alouettes owner Gary Stern, who said that this was something that should not be allowed to happen. How dare they simply punish it with a fine, which, let's be frank, boys, say you're an owner who couldn't have paid a fine and not gone bankrupt without saying you're an owner who couldn't have paid a fine and not gone bankrupt. But that's beside the point.
Stern's going to light you up on Twitter, bud.
Stern burn. I've gone back and forth with Stern a few times, and I actually enjoy it because I can't read what he says because there's no grammatical consistency, so it doesn't bug me at all.
He needs Hodge to edit his tweets before he
sends
them out.
He needs to send them through Hodge first. But frankly, every team should be taking advantage of this loophole to get the most out of their roster and the most out of their salary cap. It's in there for a reason, right? Rules only exist insofar as you are willing to absorb the punishment. As long as you're willing to pay this fine, you're completely legally allowed to go over what the stated salary cap is. And heck, you can go over by more than $100,000 if you think it's worth the draft pick. And quite frankly, as you pointed out, Hodge, I think sometimes, particularly in certain years, adding an extra player to your roster or paying a little bit more, making your team better in the now, is probably worth more than a seventh or eighth round draft pick in the CFL. So more teams should be taking advantage of this.
It's definitely worth more. If you're the Bombers, as Hodge said, and you're bringing in over $5 million in profit, pay the fine, give up the draft pick to make sure that you remain competitive. Guys, I've talked to general managers, both past and present, who will say that as long as you get the go-ahead from the big wigs or the people up top in the organization, that you should spend to that threshold that Hodge was talking about, $999,000. $99,999 up and over the cap. It's a soft salary cap, let's call it what it is, with a luxury tax system. And full credit to Amar Doman for spending the do-re-mi to get the BC Lions back in a spot where they now, for the last couple of years under his ownership, are consistently competitive. So go up to that $999,000 threshold. I can't say it properly, but anyways, you guys know what I mean. So I really don't think it's a big deal at all. Fans are going to be outraged, but I will point out one fact here that the Toronto Argonauts did not go over the salary cap, and it seems like every single time that this information comes out from the CFL, and Trevor Hardy is the main person who goes around to these teams and does the salary cap analysis and makes sure that these teams have kept their books in line, and then by that estimates if they've gone over or been under the salary cap. For years, people thought that the Argonauts will spend over the cap and the CFL doesn't come down on them with any penalty at all. But this time in 2023, Michael Pinball Clemens and that front office were under the salary cap. That hasn't been the case, I think, for the last couple of years, or they've gone over somewhat recently a couple times. But a lot of people just seem to think that the CFL favors the Argonauts for whatever reason. And that's just a bunch of garbage. I don't even understand why that exists.
Well, they weren't paying a quarterback last year. So, of course, they were able to spend more at other positions and go and be beneath the salary cap, because Chad Kelly, until quite recently, was still on his initial deal, right? He was not making very much money by CFL standards for a starting quarterback. It's the same reason why the BC Lions were able to spend at other positions when they had Nathan Rourke under center, because he wasn't making very much money. That is going to change going forward if Chad Kelly remains with that team with the money he's set to make now. But if you got a cheapo quarterback, you can spend wherever you want because you got you know, 300 to 400,000 more dollars than the average team has at your disposal.
Well, and also we're in a situation where, and I get what you're saying, Dunk. There also was a year where the Argos surpassed the salary cap and were not subject to any discipline whatsoever because it wasn't announced. But I think that was more of a pandemic issue than anything else. So I do think some of the speculation is legit for that reason, but I also agree. Ty Cats fan 69 on Twitter, who's raging about the Argonauts and everything that they ever do, is not someone who should be speculating wildly that the Argos are spending all the money, because also spending all the money is actually allowed now. You just can't do it on the cap. You have to do it in marketing, which I do understand the CFL is planning to audit and monitor, but also, again, it's a gray area. Like, you could say, okay, this player is worth $180,000 on the cap because that's the best offer they got. Off the cap, you know, if they post about your team on social media and they have a million followers, is that not worth that one post, $10,000? Because there's lots of brands that will spend $10,000 to have an influencer on Instagram post about their brand. And there are no CFL, like, active players who have a million followers on Instagram, but there are some who have a lot, right? Like, there are people like Brady Oliveira, for instance, has a quarter of a million. How much is that worth? I've talked to brand industry people who believe that that's worth $5,000. So Brady Oliveira is a guy who I think has an easy time legitimizing the marketing money that he's being paid. In some cases, it's probably maybe not going to be as legitimate, right? A guy's making $20,000 and his marketing money is just him going to a school and reading a book to some kids, which, not to say that's not a worthwhile endeavor. Obviously, it's great when CFL players get to schools, but is that one visit worth $20,000 reading to 20 kids? The answer is probably not. So yes, this is an issue that needs to be dealt with, but not in the way people think. The marketing money is the issue to me. It's not people going over the salary cap by pennies and loonies and toonies, as Arlan Bruce III would say.
The other part of the marketing issue, Hodge, for the players, is that money isn't guaranteed. It's not like base salary and the final deal of a multi-year deal now, if you're a player that's been with that team and you sign a contract extension where you have part of that base salary that's guaranteed, or a signing bonus, or some of the stuff that we lump in the hard money phrase in the CFL. So that is going to be interesting to watch as well, as you said, is how the CFL, for lack of a better term, polices this. But if you're on the player side and you only want to take, like, let's say you said in that instance, $20,000 on the cap, but you take $100,000 in marketing money, that's not guaranteed unless you get it written in stone that it actually is in the contract that you signed with the team.
Yes, and I've had sources who have indicated that in some cases, it is guaranteed in the contract. The team has said, we will pay you a minimum of X dollars to be involved in our marketing and right, make appearances on our behalf, and et cetera, et cetera. There's also contracts where it's not guaranteed. So it is certainly a gray area at best, I think, when it comes to the marketing money. And that has changed, at least in my opinion, a number of the financials around, because there are some teams that are happy to spend hundreds of thousands of dollars in marketing money. And there's some teams who I've been led to believe don't really spend beyond the cap floor. The cap floor is about 90% of the salary cap. By the way, the salary cap in 2024 in the CFL will be $5.525 million. The floor is about 90% of that. And they don't want to spend a dollar over the minimum amount of marketing that's required, which is $110,000. So it's created a system that some people feel is unfair. Others say, hey, we've got more money to spend. It's perfectly legitimate. If we want to spend more, if you want to be better, maybe you should spend more. So it's a weird issue, but it's one that is separate, at least in my opinion, from the traditional salary cap conversation that we like
to
have.
You can add another piece to this as well. If you're a player who doesn't necessarily like going out and doing these appearances, or you don't have a social media following, you probably want all that money in football money, let's call it, because some players and agents now are viewing the marketing money as extra work. Yes. So there's all different sides to this, fellas, of how this is going to play out in the future, which to me are very intriguing. I mean, you mentioned some of there about how some teams only want to spend to the salary cap floor, and some of this might come down to some of the better off teams or the richer teams, let's say, or the teams that have owners that are willing to spend, spending a bunch of money to acquire talent. But, you know, it's been proven in the past. You look at Major League Baseball, for an example. It's not always the team that spends the most that is winning the World Series or that is consistently competing. You still have to be smart with that money, but there are a lot of separate, I don't want to say issues here, but I can't come up with a better word right now, to deal with this new marketing money in the CBA.
TSN released its broadcast schedule for the 2024 season, which included only two preseason games for the second straight year. Was that a surprise to you, JC? And do you think that TSN should be broadcasting more preseason football?
It wasn't a surprise to me. TSN has made it clear that they just don't see the value in the investment in preseason games. And to be frank, in years past, I've harped on them for that, right? I didn't think there's valid criticism to lob at TSN for not taking advantage of their exclusive rights and marketing the product. But the CFL did a tremendous thing last year, where they make all their preseason games available for free online to be streamed using the in-stadium feeds. I thought it was absolutely spectacular when they did that. And if they do that again this year, which they have not announced yet, but I would expect them to continue with that initiative, I think that takes away any problem with TSN not broadcasting these preseason games. We want to be able to have them be accessible for fans, for people to be able to see them if they want to watch. But I understand the point people make sometimes when they say, well, preseason games aren't the best showcase of your product. They're sloppy football. They're a bunch of players who are going to end up being cut. It doesn't give you great value to showcase your league and try and tell fans what a great game this is when it's being played poorly. You give it to the people who want to see it via the online platform, and you limit the TSN feed so that they're happy and not spending a bunch of money to broadcast bad football. I think that's a win-win so long as the CFL continues with last year's initiative.
There are a lot of factors that go on behind the scenes in terms of decision making with broadcasting a live event, because for the uninitiated out there, you know, to have a decent quality production truck come, a crew, and the rest to put on a TSN level broadcast, you know, at minimum, that's going to start at around $50,000 per game, if not more. I'm not privy to TSN's budgets, but just being involved in live broadcasts in the past at the university level, and especially for the Vanier Cup for a number of years now, you know, that's just the minimum. So when you think about that, TSN has to then pay their talent to go and broadcast the game and think about the possibility of potentially making money back off of that. So to me, this is just a business decision. And I do agree with JC in the sense that you don't necessarily want to showcase bad football, but I'll give you an example here. And it's not the most apples to apples comparison, but if you look at the NFL preseason, the large majority of those games in the preseason are done by local TV networks that have the broadcast equipment ready at hand and can probably do it for, you know, a much lower cost than an NBC or a Fox or a CBS or an Amazon coming in, bringing in that bigger quality of a production truck, the production team, all the rest. So you see some of those big networks in the States that do the regular season games each week, how they're parsed out between, what is it, the three or four networks. ESPN was the last one that I forgot. They kind of pick and choose their games, right? They do the Hall of Fame game, and then there's some other bigger matchups where they feel like the teams and some of the players that might actually play a little bit in those games in terms of the starters could actually draw a decent audience to make their money back. Now, it's not an apples-to-apples comparison because there's so many eyeballs on the NFL. People will be watching those preseason games for fantasy football purposes and the rest. But I think this is where you can start to understand why TSN is only broadcasting two, and the model that the CFL took last year and doing what I thought was a pretty good job of getting those games available for free with live streaming. The one issue that I have, though, with the two games that they are broadcasting is if you're going to broadcast two games, pick teams that you know are going to rate well. Like, I would imagine the Montreal Alouettes, because they're the Grey Cup champion, that game is likely going to get onto RDS. So that makes some sense to me. But you got to have the Riders involved in whatever West matchup you're going to do. And some people might say, oh, I'm sick of the Riders, or, you know, they don't run this league. But you know the Riders are going to drive ratings. They've been the ratings kings for I can't even count how many years in a row now. So that one is somewhat surprising to me. Perhaps the schedule of people working played a factor into that, or the type of production truck that they could have gotten for some of those games as well played a role. But it was somewhat surprising to me not to see a Rough Riders game on TSN in the preseason.
That was the shocking thing to me, is the fact that we did not have a Rider game here. And the Riders, yes, Dunk, did lead the ratings last year with an average audience of 611,000 on English language television. The Bombers were second at 576. So still, I mean, not like far, far and away the leader, but still the leading team in terms of broadcasting. And I think a lot of people are excited to see all these new pieces for the Riders play. I was shocked that the Bombers-Riders game on Monday, May 20th, that's the Monday of the May long weekend, was not one of these two games. I was also disappointed because I want to write a post-game column on that game, and hopefully there's a stream to write one. Otherwise, boys, I'm taking May long weekend off. I'm gonna be going. I don't know where, but I'm going somewhere. But I'm hoping there's a stream.
The game for you personally on my iPhone from Mosaic Stadium. How about that?
Okay, I expect commentary and color, so you'll have to do both of those things into the phone. But I was shocked at the matchup selection. Maybe the logic is, you know, they want to keep it's like a late Friday night game that the Edmonton and BC are doing on May 31st, but, like, you know, the weekend previous, Saskatchewan at Edmonton on May 25th, like, Trey Ford's gonna play in that game. What, people are excited to watch Trey Ford. Anyways, so that was very head scratching to me. One thing that we should note, which TSN I think has gotten a little bit miffed at in the past with our reporting, is the fact that a lot of these games do take place concurrently, and that should be noted. It was noted in our reporting of that this year. Like, for instance, preseason week two, all of these games take place on Saturday, May 25th, and at one point, three of those games will be taking place at the same time. Two of them kick off at the exact same time, and the same thing is true on Friday, May 31st. There's four games on that day, and three of them overlap to start, and two of them will be overlapping to finish. So it is not possible for TSN to televise all the preseason games right now. I don't think it's realistic to ask TSN to do two regular season games at the same time. I certainly wouldn't expect them to be able to do multiple preseason games at the same time. So even if TSN wanted to, the option of televising all nine simply is not there. But should they do more than two? I mean, I don't think they should do every single one, even if it's possible, but I think more than two is not unreasonable to ask. Hopefully we get the streams. And again, those matchups, weird choices. Be curious to know the logic behind that.
I'm also curious to know the logic of picking both preseason games on the same day. Because as you mentioned, you can't show everything. There's a lot of things going on concurrently. But there are essentially two weekends with preseason games before this. They're not showing anything until the last week. To me, that seems a little jammed in there. Like, wouldn't you want a little bit more lead up to the season and excitement to build? That would be a nitpicky note to me. But again, I'm a CFL only guy. That's basically the only sport that I sit down and watch these days. So I don't know, Dunk, you're more well versed on the television scheduling side. Is there something on the calendar on those weekends that would be conflicting with those games as well?
The main thing right now would be the NHL playoffs, right? You have three Canadian teams in there. Who knows how many of them advance that far? But I just think you have to get TSN's actual insight into this, and perhaps the league would be involved. I would think they would at least consult the league on this to fully understand the decision, because I'm surprised that they're doing two games on one day. Like, you think you would kind of spread that out a little bit, have a bit of a lead in, you know, maybe one game in week one or week two, one game in week three. So you kind of have a couple touch points before you go into the season. But I'm sure there is, to be fair, some decent thought. I shouldn't even say decent thought, but some thought behind this from the CFL and TSN as to why they've picked these two games.
The Ottawa Redblacks have lost starting running back Devontae Williams to an Achilles injury he sustained during training, while Canadian running back Jackson Bennett has elected to retire. What will the team do in the backfield?
A lot of people are freaking out, and maybe not rightfully so. I do understand it, though, because Williams is a home run hitter, and it's rare to find that kind of talent who has the quick success like Williams has in the CFL. But the Redblacks are confident. They've signed three American running backs that are currently on their roster. And with Williams presumably going on the six-game injured list at some point, like, his season's pretty much done with.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This injury, and also Jackson Bennett retiring, that's going to open up a couple roster spots. So there's a negotiation list there. I took a look. The Redblacks have some running backs on that list, but the three Americans that they have signed that I think are at least in the mix right now, pending any further signings, to compete for the RB1 job are Reichwell Armstead, Kylan Hill, and Tyler Huseman. And I think if you kind of look at their profiles, that Armstead would be the most intriguing one, has the most NFL experience out of those three, ran a 4.45 time in the 40-yard dash. Yes, that was before the 2019 NFL draft, but the dude still has speed, and he's 5'11", 220 pounds, and he's coming out of Temple University. The Redblacks had some success with a former quarterback who came out of Temple University. So I'm not saying he's going to be Henry Burris level as a running back, but to me, he's intriguing. He spent some time with the Jacksonville Jaguars after they selected him in the fifth round of the 2019 NFL draft, has just under 200 yards rushing in the NFL. And I think he's a guy that, you know, could translate well to the CFL. But as you guys well know, you look at some of these guys that come from the NFL and you think, oh, they could be a really good CFL running back. It doesn't necessarily happen the way that you project it. So I would watch the three guys that I mentioned in training camp competing for that RB1 job. And I would imagine that the Redblacks are probably going to add at least one other body, if not two, with those roster spots now vacated by Williams and Bennett.
Well, you heard it here first, folks. Reichwell Armstead, the next Henry Burris. Justin Dunk said that explicitly, so please feel free to wildly speculate about how successful.
I mean, we twist others' words, so I'll allow it. Right?
Do we twist others? I don't think we twist others' words.
Well, some people feel like we do.
Some people feel like we do. That's accurate. I disagree that we do that. I did do that this time because they're your words, and I like raking you over the coals. Which is allowed on this show because you're on this show. But in all seriousness, I will say this. So first of all, shout out to Devontae Williams. Tearing your Achilles sucks, right? It is a terrible injury. It takes a long time to come back from. And unfortunately, I will say, I'm not saying this will be the case for Williams, but there is precedent, right, for running backs suffering that injury and never getting that quick twitch back. And hopefully that's not the case with him. Hopefully he makes a full recovery, comes back, and lights it up in 2025. But I will say this. I feel like as much as Devontae Williams has that home run hitting ability as a running back, I feel like the Ottawa Redblacks have been trying to change their identity on the offensive side of the ball, right? And adding, you know, big punishing offensive linemen, guys like Drew Desjarlais in the middle, guys like Dante Bull off the edge, to be a ground and pound, punchy in the mouth physical football team. And I think getting a bigger back, I mean, Williams only weighs 173 pounds, right? I think is pertinent. And another thing I will say is Drew Brown in Winnipeg was accustomed to getting excellent pass protection out of his running back, and of course, Brady Oliveira, who I think is the best pass blocking running back in the CFL, maybe second only to AJ Ouellette, who's now in Saskatchewan. So if I'm the Ottawa Redblacks, I'm happy to give up some of that home run hitting ability for somebody who's going to, first of all, keep Drew Brown healthy, because the reason the Redblacks have been at the bottom of the East Division standings for the last couple of seasons, at least, is largely due to the inability of them to keep their quarterbacks healthy, and they do not want Drew Brown, who's also, let's be honest, not a very large man, to be getting punished left, right, and center. But then also, I think they can find somebody, whether it's Armstead or somebody else, who can maybe reinforce some of that physical nature that they're looking to add to that offense, because when you don't have as much talent as other teams, physicality can be something that beats out talent. And I'm not saying the Ottawa Redblacks don't have talent. I don't think their receiving core is as good as some in the league, but I think that that physicality, that physical mindset could help propel what they have just a little bit further.
You talk about the physicality with Kylan Hill as well. I think we should mention him. 5'10", 214 pounds, runs 4.57 in the 40, spent some time with the Green Bay Packers. So I think that's kind of where you can see them going. We mentioned the size of Armstead, you know, 220 pounds. So they're trying to bring that physicality at the running back spot with the Americans that they have under contract, at least those two right now.
Yeah. Look, I have a reputation on this podcast. We all know it. It's widely discussed. We're going to try to avoid it. The Ottawa Redblacks are going to be just fine. Running backs are largely replaceable. That's all I'm going to say on that topic. You guys have pointed out the many qualified candidates that are vying for that position. And I think there's some tremendous talent there. I'm going to approach it from a different angle so we don't get drug into a long discussion about the inherent value of running backs. And that's that there's two players that have to be replaced here. The second one being Jackson Bennett, who was a valuable Canadian depth piece who could get you out of a game as a ball carrier, but also contributed heavily on special teams. And that's a role that will also need to be filled. And I think they've got somebody on the roster who can do that in Amilcar Polk, who was a late round draft pick last year, a backup for the Ottawa GGs for most of his career, who really excelled on special teams, then went back to school last year, had a breakout 1,000-yard season at the University of Ottawa, and really can fill that role despite not having a tremendous amount of size. But we'll also discuss the CFL draft in a little bit here on this pod, and there's a couple of options that they could go out and get, guys like Michael Chrysike, that could potentially fill that role as well. For me, that is maybe not quite as important as filling your starting running back role, but certainly damn important, because the things that Jackson Bennett was able to give them, the flexibility, the value on special teams, if they can find a guy who can fill that role as well, and, you know, will be a little bit younger potentially, and maybe can even grow into a starting role down the line as a Canadian, there will be value to that position.
Look at JC throwing this stuff in our faces, Hodge.
I don't want to get into it.
I do think the one element that Ottawa can't quickly replace is that home run hitting ability. You mentioned Williams's lack of size, Hodge, and I think ideally for the Redblacks this season, if Williams was going to be healthy, of course he's not, you would have had that burst and ability to take it to the house real quick, along with one of these bigger American backs that we mentioned, Armstead or Hill or Huseman or whoever might fill that role, would have been an ideal 1-2 punch to have that physicality. So we'll see how that plays out. That will be one of the key position battles to watch around the league in Ottawa, is who wins that starting running back job.
The NFL draft starts on Thursday night and runs through Saturday, all 7 rounds. 4 Canadians are expected to be selected, though there's a possibility we could see more or less than that number. JC, what is your prediction?
There is a possibility that up to 7 Canadians could be selected here. It would be a record. I don't think we get up that high, boys. I think all 7 of them will end up with a contract when all is said and done, but not all will get selected. I'm going to go the over on the over-under of 4. I'm going to say it's 5, tying the record once again, because I think you've got 3 locks in Isaiah Adams, the tremendous offensive lineman from the University of Illinois, Theo Johnson, the freakish tight end from Penn State, and Tanner McLaughlin, who is a sleeper in a lot of scouts' eyes as the tight end from Arizona. But then the interest in Giovanni Manu as an absolute freak of a big body tackle from UBC, I think he's a lock to get drafted as well at this point. And I have a hard time seeing Theo Benedet not get selected at all. I think he'll end up being a late round flyer. And if he isn't, Kyle Hergel could very much fill that same role out of Boston College. All of those guys have a very, very legitimate shot to get drafted. And on top of all that, you've got Quantez Stiggers as well, the reigning CFL Most Outstanding Rookie, who I think will probably go in round 4 or 5 as a potential starting cornerback in the NFL after a season in Canada. So it's a very exciting draft year. We could see a record tied or broken, and something that hasn't happened in over 20 years in a player getting drafted directly from the CFL.
A total of 75 Canadians since 1966, that's the Super Bowl era, have been drafted into the NFL. And that record of 5 was set last year, fellas, in the 2023 NFL draft. Matthew Bergeron, the offensive lineman, went to Atlanta. Then you had Sidney Brown going to the Eagles, a defensive back. You also had his brother, Chase Brown, going to the Cincinnati Bengals. Sidney Soh, the offensive lineman, going to the Patriots, and Tavius Robinson, the defensive lineman, University of Guelph, by way of the Ole Miss Rebels, being selected by the Baltimore Ravens in the draft. And then you had Jared Wayne signed as an undrafted free agent, and Jonathan Sutherland, the defensive back, as well. So a lot of names in the mix here. And the point that I really want to drive home here, guys, is that we're in the golden era of Canadian football talent right now. There have never been more Canadians getting drafted in the NFL, getting opportunities in the NFL as undrafted free agents. And there have never been more Canadians coming through the CFL. I know you guys hate this term, but at the skill positions. So I really believe this is just the tip of the iceberg, so to speak, or the start of a big wave of Canadian talent consistently coming through. It would be ideal, and I think a big boost, to see a guy like Nathan Rourke, a Canadian quarterback, break in and get playing time in the regular season. I think that would give another push, but there is no doubt that we are in a golden era that is just getting started here, fellas, with Canadian football talent.
My prediction is that we will see 4 get picked. It is Isaiah Adams, the two tight ends, Theo Johnson, Tanner McLaughlin, and then I think Giovanni Manu is going to be the first U Sports player drafted since David Onyemata in 2016. I think he's going to get picked in the 6th or 7th round as a developmental offensive lineman. I'm talking to Manu later today to get an update on his status heading into this upcoming weekend, so I'm looking forward to that conversation. But as JC said, I think we will see more players earn contracts. And the most exciting thing for me, boys, honestly, about the NFL draft is that it finally sets the stage for the CFL draft, because we'll actually know who has a contract, who doesn't, who has the minicamp invite, who doesn't. And though I think a lot of CFL draft boards are getting close to being finalized, this will allow teams to start setting them in stone.
Just before we move on, I should mention the one player I didn't say by name who could get a contract and likely will is Aneem Donkwa, the massive Ghanaian-born, Brampton-raised offensive tackle from Howard University. I think he didn't test well enough or doesn't move well enough to end up being a draft pick, but guys with his size, again, he's like Manu, 6'8" and 350+ pounds. They don't get through this process without at least getting their name on an NFL deal. I think he's going to be in training camp with a club.
So Dunk, or JC, you said he was born in Ghana and he was raised in Brampton. Are you sure there were no other places that he lived?
He finished high school in the States. I mean, his hometown is where he spent the majority of his formative years. I would list it as Brampton, but you'd have to ask him.
Well, I want to know what airports he flew out of. I want to know where he day tripped. I want to know everything because you said that's important last week.
It is. That's why I said Canadian born. And you should note that Giovanni Manu was born in Tonga. You can ask him about that. You can ask him where he thinks his hometown is. Is it Pitt Meadows or is it Tonga?
I will ask him that.
Also ask him how to say his name properly, Hodge.
I believe it's Manu, but I will ask him that, yes.
Manu. The 2024 CFL Draft goes on Tuesday, April 30th at 8 p.m. Eastern Time, with the Elks currently holding the number one overall pick. Hodge, you've been on this beat. Is Chris Jones going to trade the pick or use it or do something Chris Jones-like with it that we've never even thought of before? And most importantly, if Edmonton keeps it, who could they take?
My official prediction is in, and regrettably, it's just kind of a repeat of what I said last week. I think barring a shocking offer from another team in the CFL, the Edmonton Elks, unlike 2022 when they traded the pick, they're going to keep it, and they're going to take Cincinnati linebacker Joel DeBlanco. I've been led to believe that there are individuals in the Elks building who might rather see this team take an offensive lineman with the top pick because it is a bumper crop of offensive linemen. But I think Chris Jones has become enamored with the 26-year-old who's got a couple years of pro experience, so I think is going to be a day one game wrecker on special teams. And before the year is out, will win a starting job in that linebacking core. He's athletic enough to play weak side linebacker, though traditionally he has played the Mike position. I think he is a true sideline to sideline defensive player. He's physical. He's fast. He's actually in better shape, testing more athletically now than he did coming out of the Bearcats program 2 years ago. And I think that the fact that he's got some family in Edmonton is a really nice cherry on top. You know, I see that being the first overall pick. I don't believe that Nick Mardner, who was the first overall pick in my original mock draft, is in strong consideration for this selection. It is Chris Jones, though. So as you said, Dunk, you never know. He could go completely off the board and do something Chris Jones-like. But for right now, I do think that the Elks keep the pick, and I do think that the selection will be linebacker Joel DeBlanco out of the University of Cincinnati.
It's been very interesting to see as this process has gone along. It's become more clear in our minds who the first overall pick is going to be. But there have been a growing number of names that sort of get tossed out there as people try to throw smoke up in the air ahead of the draft and potentially maybe drum up some extra interest if there was a crazy trade that another team wanted to make to move up and go to number one to get the player of their choosing. I don't see it happening. I think you're spot on, Hodge, that DeBlanco is the cream of this particular crop, and Edmonton would be absolutely stupid not to go and get a player of his caliber at number one overall. However, it is Chris Jones, and he's made some decisions of that nature in the past.
Hodge, you sound pretty confident in Joel DeBlanco being the first overall pick to Edmonton. What would you rate it on a scale of, let's say, 1 to 10 in terms of confidence level?
Confidence level, I would say right now is a 7. I would not give it a 10. I would not give it a 9. I might go as high as 8, but we will have to wait and see. As you know, perhaps more than anybody, the smoke screens, the head fakes, the lies, the distortion, whatever you want to call it, the turbulence comes out in full force this time of year. And there has been lots of that. I've had a few people suggest some very bizarre names as being possibilities for the first overall pick. To me, I believe it will be Joel DeBlanco. And by the way, if I were to grade that pick, I would give it an A+. I know that Niles Morgan is a very talented linebacker that the Elks have, but guess what? Joel DeBlanco is, I think, a player who's going to be as good or better. And I also think if you look at the history of this draft, I think you can fairly say that Chris Jones made a mistake in 2022 when he traded away the first overall pick. And I think he made a huge mistake in 2016 when he passed. He also had the first overall pick that year at Saskatchewan, passed on Alex Singleton, who was a NFL caliber linebacker with pro experience who was available. And I think Chris Jones this year has the opportunity to right more than one wrong and say, hey, look, you fooled me once. I'm not going to get fooled twice. I'm not going to overthink this. I'm taking the best player who is immediately available, and I'm taking Joel DeBlanco to be an absolute stud for us at linebacker. Let's not forget, this club used the second overall pick in last year's draft on Michael Brodrick, who is the perfect backup or rotational guy for Joel DeBlanco. He's another very athletic linebacker who's long. He can cover sideline to sideline. So to me, this is a pick that Chris Jones should not overthink. Put the right, fill in the card now, right? Do it now. Just write it, leave it on the draft room table, and then just read it to Randy Ambrosi or whoever it is in the CFL head office over the phone on 30th. Don't overthink it, because there's lots of teams right behind you who are going to be delighted if Joel DeBlanco is still on the board at 2, or dare I even say 3rd overall.
Talk about smoke screens in that year that Alex Singleton was picked, and I don't remember exactly where it came from, but it probably started with the Stampeders putting out there that Alex Singleton was potentially going to sign a contract in the NFL. I forget the team of note at the time,
but I believe it was the Patriots.
Part of the reason that he fell. Yeah, I think it was New England. And it worked beautifully for Calgary because he fell. So perhaps that was part of the reason that Chris Jones didn't take him. But either way, obviously that looms as a massive mistake. It does remain to be seen whether Joel DeBlanco becomes any level of Alex Singleton, if he can be even as good as Singleton was in the CFL, let alone what he's gone on to do now in the NFL. He's a poster boy for the Denver Broncos uniform reveal, for heaven's sake. So Singleton is legit. Let's just be careful with some of these comparisons. And this is more for the viewers and listeners and readers out there. When we talk about these players, we're talking about the upside with Singleton, because DeBlanco still has a long way to go if he's going to even be in the caliber or same conversation as Singleton.
No, I think DeBlanco is going to be just as good as Henry Burris. I'm putting that on the record right now.
Yes, I love it.
Have you boys seen the movie Draft Day?
No.
No, you haven't. Yeah, it's a terrible film. Terrible
Don't ever watch
film.
It, Hodge.
I won't.
But do you think Chris Jones has a tiny little green post-it note on which he's written Joel DeBlanco no matter what, just to remind himself every time someone
I don't think he has post-it notes. He keeps all his intel in his head, for sure.
He is a little paranoid that way, but I don't know. You gotta have a little reminder. We should note before we move on, keep it locked on Three Down Nation for all your draft coverage. All throughout on the website, Hodge will have his annual live blog. You can follow along there for his excellent written analysis. And then myself and Ben Grant will be live on YouTube for all 8 rounds starting at 8 p.m. Eastern time on Tuesday. And then, of course, we'll rehash it all on the podcast the following day. So lots of coverage to come on the CFL draft. Three Down Nation is the place to find all your CFL draft info.
I don't think Chris Jones, by the way, uses green sticky notes. I think he uses green $100 US bills. If you know, you know. It's now time for Hodge's Heritage Moment. On this day in 1981, the Montreal Alouettes signed future Hall of Fame offensive lineman Chris Walby. The Winnipeg native was selected with the 4th overall pick in that year's CFL draft out of Dickinson State University, but was repeatedly moved between the active and practice rosters during his rookie year without his knowledge, so the team could save money. Paul Robson, who was then the assistant general manager of the Blue Bombers, and is still alive, living in Winnipeg, by the way, jumped on the opportunity to sign Walby partway through the season when his name appeared on the waiver wire, and the rest, as they say, is history. Walby played 17 seasons for his hometown team, earning 9 CFL All-Star selections and 2 Most Outstanding Offensive Lineman awards. He was inducted into the Canadian Football Hall of Fame in 2003. JC, do you think it's possible that the Alouettes management from that time regrets messing with Chris Walby?
This might be one of the worst management decisions in CFL history. I mean, you're saving a couple bucks here and in the process losing arguably the greatest offensive lineman in CFL history. That is not a fair trade-off. I don't know what the financial situation was in Montreal at this time, likely dire given that period in league history. but there was no amount of money worth losing a player like Chris Walby. You just got to give it one of those.
Just terrible. I don't know how these decisions are made, but I mean, this is back in the era, I believe, fellas, where there was no salary cap. So this was strictly a business decision to try to save some pennies, and it cost them, as JC said, I'll echo that sentiment, one of the best linemen in CFL history and an absolute gem of a personality who I think in some form or fashion should still be involved in broadcasting in the CFL on a consistent basis. When he used to do the CFL games on CBC with Mark Lee or whoever was on play-by-play there, it was awesome. I thought he was really good, and it would be great to potentially see that back in the future.
And if you've never looked up, by the way, if you've never looked up a picture of Bluto, the cartoon character, you will immediately understand why Chris Walby's nickname is Bluto. He is an absolute dead ringer for Bluto from the old Popeyes cartoon. It's a beauty. And by the way, I've talked to Chris about this, and I've talked to Paul Robson about this. And first of all, the Bombers could have just claimed Chris, because each team back in the day, before the draft took place, could claim two territorial exemptions. So, in other words, you get two players from your home area, your home territory, whatever. And I don't remember who the Bombers used their territorial picks on. I know that Walby was very much, because he was actually coming out of college as a defensive end. So he was very much in consideration to be used, and they didn't end up taking him. And obviously they later came to regret that. So they were super excited to get him through this. But this practice of moving a guy, like they were literally forging Chris Walby's name on contracts to get him off the active and onto the practice roster week after week. And from what I understand, it wasn't like a super uncommon tactic. Like that was somewhat regularly done back in like the 70s and the 80s. So it was considered quite the faux pas that the Bombers would take advantage of it and exploit another team using this tactic. But I don't think Paul Robson regrets it. Let's put it that way.
Let's go to the three-minute drill, fellas. Canadian offensive lineman Logan Bandy has retired following two seasons with the Saskatchewan Roughriders at the age of 24. Is that a big loss for the green and white?
I mean, I think Bandy showed some development over the last couple of years. However, with that being said, given that this is a bumper crop of offensive linemen and the Riders are going to be able to get a really good one, even in the second round, I think that mitigates a lot of what would otherwise be more of a loss for this team. Canadian receiver Damian Alford has transferred to the University of Utah following a messy departure from Syracuse. What can you tell us about it?
It's just a bit of a bizarre situation overall. Damian Alford was a team captain for the Orange. He was their top receiver last year. He went into spring camp with a new head coach, and by the sounds of it, was quite up front with his coach, saying, "Hey, I'm maybe mulling over the possibility of transferring after I graduate in May. I'm not sure yet. I'm going to talk it over with my family and see, but just so you're aware, this is on the table." And the next day he goes on social media and finds out he's been dismissed from the team entirely on Twitter. So he, of course, responded there. There was a bit of a fracas back and forth. Ultimately, head coach Brand Brown came out on social media and said, "Alford is allowed to continue and graduate from Syracuse. We endorse his character fully. It was just a situation where a new head coach was trying to set a team culture and didn't want any people who were on the fence not around. I think Alford is better off for it, going to what is a stronger program at Utah." The CFLPA has become an affiliate member of the Canadian Labor Congress. Is that a major deal?
It definitely is. To some, it might be boring, but the fact that the CFLPA is now aligned with the CLC gives them exposure to Congress's 3 million members and 49 other unions for support. So it essentially allows the PA to be viewed as a union pretty much like many of the unions that are across this country, and should help them in terms of workers' compensation, injuries suffered on the job, things of the like. And for the people who think that it's not a big deal, the NHL Players Association has kept close ties on what the CFLPA has done. So Great job by the president, Solomon Elamimian, and executive director, Brian Ramsey, to get this done. They've really been pushing to further compensation for the players, and especially in their post-playing careers that have suffered major injuries. You know, Jonathan Hefney obviously comes to mind. This is a massive deal for the union and its players going forward. BC Lions kicker Sean White celebrated his first child's gender reveal by kicking a mini football that exploded with pink smoke going all over. It's going to be a baby girl. Is that the best gender reveal you've ever seen, Hodge?
I don't know about the best I've ever seen. I thought it was really good. But to me, any gender reveal that does not burn down a forest is a success. Because I remember that story from a few years ago and thinking, maybe these have gone too far. So football
Sean is in a firefighter.
Well, so he's credit to him for not endangering the beautiful trees of White Rock, BC by doing something dangerous. I thought kicking a football was a great way to make this gender reveal. The BC Lions will induct their 2000 Grey Cup team into the Wall of Fame. Is that a deserving honor?
Look, there's some very talented individuals on that team, and it's a great story. I mean, they're the first sub 500 team to go and win the Grey Cup. I'm personally not a fan of putting championship winning teams on the Wall of Fame. I think the Grey Cup banner that's already hanging in your stadium is kind of that already, and in particular, this is a team that struggled at points during the regular season and ended up firing their coach halfway through the year. So I'm a little skeptical on it, but you can't take away what they ultimately achieved. The Toronto Argonauts are officially returning to the University of Guelph for training camp and the preseason. Dunk, how does it feel to have the team right in your own backyard?
It's fun, man. It's easy and it's accessible, especially people coming out from the GTA area to get to Guelph. It's a nice city. Come out there, you know, enjoy the town a little bit, have a nice, you know, breakfast, lunch, or dinner, either before you're going to go watch practice or after. And of course, there's going to be a game at Alumni Stadium as well. I think it's really great for all parties, and that's why this partnership has continued. CFL Commissioner Randy Ambrosi is being inducted into the Gridiron Greats Hall of Fame. Is he worthy of that honor?
Well, it's interesting, right? This organization raises money essentially for former NFL players who are in dire need of health coverage and support. So it's a super cool initiative. And it seems to me that basically once a year, give or take, they allow a CFL person, former player, whatever, who has, you know, achieved great success on and off the field to be inducted, and they leave that up to the CFL Alumni Association. So kudos to Ambrosi, right? He did have a successful career in business after his playing career is done, and he is now the fourth longest tenured commissioner in CFL history. Feels like just yesterday he got hired. Former Edmonton running back and outspoken NFL general manager Bill Tobin passed away this week at 83. How will you remember him?
Well, look, he was responsible for drafting eight, count them, eight Pro Football Hall of Famers during his time as an NFL executive, including the likes of Walter Payton, Marshall Faulk, and Marvin Harrison. But I'm going to remember him the same way that everyone else is going to remember him, for his infamous 1994 interview during the NFL draft where he ripped Mel Kiper Jr. New one on live television for critiquing his pick of linebacker Trev Alberts instead of quarterback Trent Dilfer. I think he compared Mel Kiper's intelligence in football to that of his mailman. It was a fantastic viral moment before there were viral moments. It really elevated the draft into a reality TV spectacle. We could all be so lucky as draft analysts to have a GM tee off on us the way that Bill Tobin did on Mel Kiper. I hope to be remembered that way. Dunk, Darian Durant told the Sports Cage that Kerry Joseph pretty much made his career in the CFL because he was such a good mentor in Ryderville. Do you think Darian was a good mentor after Joseph left?
No, I wasn't around to cover the team during that time, but according to Mr. Durant, he didn't think that he was. He felt like he could have supported some younger players around him better. Drew Tate was one that he named specifically, and I thought it was very honest and refreshing from Durant in his first appearance on the Sports Cage. He's going to be a regular there Mondays at 5 p.m. Sasky time. And I think, you know, this is really intriguing for Durant overall because he's been kind of lying under the radar, living in Toronto with his wife that he met while he was playing in the CFL. And that's where he now calls home. And there should be some more stuff going on with him in the media in the near future as well.
We thank you as always for listening to the Three Down Nation podcast. We'll see you next week for another episode and also for a very special episode on Sunday with JC, Ben Grant, and myself as we do a live mock draft. You can find it on YouTube, but we will also put an audio version right here for you to find.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.